like, I have a pretty great body and I love my body and I love my face, but every once in a while in photos, there is just a funky angle that makes me look like not even true to who I am. Like, do my hips look like that? Does my waist look like that? Like, where did those even come from? Yeah. So I think I've mostly used it to kind of like try to bring the photo back to how I actually look. But I mean, I've definitely done some shady things. I've corrected yoga poses with Facetune before. Like, I don't, you know, give myself an hourglass figure, but I might like straighten a knee every now and then.
I believe that each and every one of us has the power within ourselves to create the life that we really want. And I want to help give you the tools to make that happen. I'm Danica Patrick, and I'm pretty intense. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Caitlin Turner, who, if anyone does yoga or follows just really beautiful pictures on Instagram, she goes by Gypset Goddess on Instagram, and I followed her for a really long time. She is a beautiful girl. She has wonderful things to say in her captions, and I thought, man, I really want to talk to this. I want to talk to this girl. She seems interesting. And truth be told, I didn't really know exactly what to expect, because do you know what to expect when you only know somebody on Instagram? But it was better than I could have ever expected. We had a lot of things in common. We talked about artificial intelligence. We talked about confidence. We talked about growing and discomfort. She took me by surprise, and I'm really glad that we were able to have that conversation and able to have this platform for both of us, but for her to be able to say more instead of just a short little caption. We got to expand on things, and I had a lot of fun, and I hope you do too. I think a story that I read that resonates with me is like a great example of how we can manifest in our life by asking for something, was when I read that you were being asked why you were posting, spend so much time posting on social media, and you were like, well, who knows, maybe one day I'll get a TV show out of it. And you did.
Yes. That actually happened with a lot of things. Like, so many different versions of that. I remember when I was first starting to do my Instagram, it was just yoga photos. And I went home for Christmas and I asked my dad to help me take yoga photos. And at the time, I couldn't even really do a handstand or anything. So it was really hard to take photos of me, because I could hold a handstand for 1 second and then I'd fall and you'd get a photo.
Well, of course, now we know you just take a video and you just go to that one frame where you're standing up and then right. You screenshot it and it looks like you've been holding, baby.
That would have been way more clever. And I wasn't doing that. And my dad was like, Caitlin, I don't understand. Why are we doing this? And yeah. I said, well, Dad, you know, maybe one day I'm going to have like 10,000 followers and I'm going to get to go visit my favorite designer in her studio and I'm going to get lots of press. Uh-huh. And he just kind of shook his head and was like, yeah, sure, Caitlin, sure you are. But then I got to go visit that designer in her showroom in New
Who
York.
Was it?
It was Mara Hoffman. Oh my she does gosh. These amazing prints. And then I got written up in the New York Times style section, which is my dad's favorite newspaper. And Aww. It was like, in that moment, I had kind of made it. And he still tells the story now, even though it happened back in like 2014. Like, she told me she was gonna get all this press and meet this designer, and she did. And the TV show too,
That's
all for
so
yoga.
Cool. I mean, I totally agree with that. I think about the businesses I have and how they were all just ideas. They were all mm-hmm. just thoughts in my head, and then they came to life, and now they're something. And you have to ask for the things that you want and imagine them. So where did that sort of dreaming, imaginative quality come from?
I think I've always had it. I've just always had a big imagination ever since I was a kid, and I used to get really stressed out. I can remember even being like 5 years old, and I would get so stressed out at school when they would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, because I never really had a clear answer, because what I wanted to be, I knew when I grew up, is somebody that created something. I didn't mm-hmm. know what yet, but enough so that I could work with my family and all of my friends so that we could, you know, all have money and go travel together and play. But there wasn't really a career that had that name. And it turns out that I grew up and created that career.
That's so cool. I just think it's not as complicated and as hard or impossible as people try and make it. And you just have to really know what the heck it is that you want directionally or emotionally. Sometimes I ask for that. Like, I'm like, I just want to have an adventurous life that's joyful and fun, and I want to travel. And then all of a sudden, like, those were my goals not very long ago. And this year, like, traveling was a big one, especially I knew I wanted to travel after I was done racing. And I have probably taken, I don't know, I mean, I took 8 trips in 2 months at the beginning of the year.
Wow, that's a lot.
So, yeah, everything from Austria to New Zealand to Mexico and all over the place. And it's like, you know, you just have to set an intention for what you want. But travel is something I love, and you've done a ton of travel.
I have. It's funny because I actually used to be really afraid to travel.
Why?
I think I just hadn't seen that much of the world, and I was really afraid to step out of my comfort zone or, like, go somewhere where English wasn't the main language. And I got
really... I think that's our programming, though.
Yeah.
I think that in this country... And this is just, this is my opinion, but I think in this country, we try and scare you, we, not I, someone tries to scare us away from leaving. Like, Mexico's scary, and don't go to Africa, and don't go here, and it's dangerous. I don't know about you, but everywhere else I go, I feel actually more safe than here.
In a lot of ways, yes, because I feel like you're right, there are so many fear tactics here, and it's not even hard to scare people, like, especially now in this current climate, I think we're going in such an different nationalistic direction than we have in the past. And I heard the craziest statistic the other day that only 11% of Americans have passports.
Yeah, I heard that too recently.
I
heard it was even less than that, but that's so sad.
Right? And it's so interesting because you hear so many people, like, complain about our country, for example, and it's like, well, have you ever been to any others?
Like, so I did an Instagram post. It was like, World Day or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it was just like some, you know, kind of prettier picture, like landscape-ish. And my caption was about traveling and how I've been to 31 countries, which turns out it's only 12% of the world. And I want to keep traveling more. And everywhere I go, it's so beautiful. And, you know, you just have to kind of set the date and go. And if you, you know, means are difficult, then plan ahead. And people are like, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know how people are, right?
Yeah.
They just absolutely Debbie down what you're saying. They're like, I can, you know, some people have to work and that's not possible. I'm like,
yeah, it must be nice.
Yeah, it must be nice. And you're like, well, you know, if you don't think you can go, you never will. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we talked about at the beginning, you manifested all this stuff to happen in your life because you asked for it in a way. You said it, you put it out there. And these people, all they're putting out there is, I can't do that. Well, then you're going to suck and you're just going to not do that.
That's so true. I broke through that with travel, but I've definitely been struggling even recently with that feeling of I can't. Because I came from a family of entrepreneurs and I've almost started like 10 different companies. And every time right before it was about to launch, I got so afraid of failure that I kind of ended up sabotaging and killing the whole thing. And now I'm doing it again, but this one's actually going to start. But it was totally that mentality of I can't. I had this story that I can't do things on my own and that I can't figure things out on my own. So then when I would try to do things on my own, that's not even true. I'm a really intelligent person. I can figure out really complex problems. So it's a ridiculous story to have about myself.
Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from my parents probably a little bit. They weren't really like helicopter parents, but I think they always just really helped me with everything, almost to a fault. Like, I never made my own doctor's appointments.
Enabled you on some level?
Yeah, or any of these things where you sort of slowly but surely learn how to be an adult.
Yeah.
I kind of skipped a lot of those lessons. Yep. And so I feel like I'm finally starting to break through and figure out, like, I can figure things out on my own, and I can do that. But what I experienced in the past is that when you have that story about yourself, whether it's true in actuality or not, it's almost like our minds don't want to be wrong. So when you have a story like that, or when I had a story like that, my behavior would start to reflect that story, even if it wasn't true. Just so the story wouldn't be wrong. But
of
like,
course,
that's not the story I want of my life.
I mean, of course I've done that too in my life. And I'm like, that's kind of how I describe it. I said, when I when you have an idea, like, you will validate the shit out of that idea to make sure that you're right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you will look like Inspector Gadget for every possible reason and way that what you're thinking that's not a good thing is, you know, it's the victim mentality. You know, like, I'm going to find evidence to why this bad thought is totally real and I'm totally not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just being more crazy.
Yeah, but that's absolutely crazy.
That's a very insightful thing to learn. That's not an easy thing to learn, that you recognize that on the inside you are continuing the lie, perpetuating the lie in the story. In the mind, you apparently, as I'm not a scientist, but it really can't tell the difference between truth and a lie. So if you visualize something enough and believe it, that in your subconscious, that is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Just like something that really happened to you is. On a slight side note of that, you can have an experience, and over time, when you repeat this story to yourself over and over and over again, you can twist it just a little more and a little more to create a story in the end that you repeat to yourself that is actually barely even real anymore.
I've heard that most of the stories we have about ourselves in our heads aren't even true because they aren't even the original story anymore. Because I think you do those little tweaks every single time you have the memory until the original story and the one that you carry around don't even look the same next to each other.
Right. This takes a lot of patience and self-reflection to even step back enough to recognize that instead of just like going through, you know, being, you know, the human race and you're just racing towards the next thing to slow down enough. Tell me about the businesses that failed.
Well, I mean, I can't even say that they failed because they never even launched. So, I mean, I feel like I failed more than they did because the ideas were good.
Well, they're in a holding pattern then.
Yeah.
What's in a holding pattern?
I've written an entire ebook on how to do the splits.
Huh.
And it has video material with it. It's quite a collection of things. I worked really hard on it.
Yeah.
And then I just got so scared that nobody would buy it and it would make me look stupid, that everyone would see that I released this thing that completely flopped, that I ended up not releasing it. So
that was where it stopped, as you just said, no, I'm not ready.
Well, I mean, it was a way longer conversation and far more drawn out, but that was really the message behind it all. And I was going to start a hat company, like making baseball caps and sort of like vintage style trucker hats. And I did a ton of work on that one. And then the same thing, I was like, well, nobody's going to buy this and I'm going to look ridiculous. And it's kind of the same story that keeps coming up. Like, and it usually comes up not even at a time when I'm really thinking about the sales of something. That's kind of how it manifests. But I think when it really comes up is back to that old story of I can't figure it out. Like, I'd get to a step in the process that maybe involved paperwork or some sort of accounting and business math that I didn't understand well. And rather than sort of looking in the mirror about that, I would tell a different story that I was familiar with that was, nobody's going to buy this and I'm going to look ridiculous. It's going to flop. And I'd kind of let that take it away rather than recognizing that I had just simply encountered an obstacle that I didn't feel I could overcome.
Do you have a hard time asking for help?
Less so now, which is probably why this company is actually going to launch. But I guess in things like that, I do. It's weird. I don't have a hard time asking for favors, but I think I have a hard time asking for help because in doing that, there's an admission of, I don't know everything. And I think that's sometimes a hard one for me to make.
Sure. Well, it's a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vulnerability to say, I don't know. I need help. But, you know, Brené Brown is a really insightful, you know, woman who speaks on this so much. And, you know, when you ask someone for help, you put your, they learn to trust you and there's a connection there. Because if somebody, if I said to you, Caitlin, I really need your help with this, you'd be like, gotcha, what do you need? Because it's a trust thing. If you ask somebody for something, you respect them. And the bond can grow then. So it's a totally hard thing to do because you want to, you know, everybody wants to be proud and do everything themselves.
And like control your exterior appearance and how you land with people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, you know, speaking of exterior appearance, that's, you know, being a social influencer, mean, that's like the name of the game. Yeah. And I was super proud and glad to see influencers be vulnerable, especially after time. And so at the beginning of the year, when you had talked about how, you know, you just don't really feel authentic and you were going to show more instead of being Gypsit goddess on social media, you're like, you're going to see more Caitlyn.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck yeah. Because like, we want to see that as consumers. And I would consider myself one of those because I follow you. So, I want to know, going back in time more, like, what it, like, I think it's a very intriguing and interesting role because I think people, you know, we idolize influencers in a way. So how, what was at the beginning, what was it like? Like when it really started, when you got your 10,000 followers?
Well, it was at that time really amazing. And unexpectedly so, because I had never been into social media. Like, mm-hmm. I was the last person, I think, to join Facebook. I probably mm-hmm. didn't even join Facebook until maybe 2011 or 2012. And it was already at that time so much a part of social interaction and social connection. Yeah. Like, yeah. I remember at that time going to parties and everybody would be like, what's your Facebook so we can connect? And I'm like,
why don't you? I didn't go to college, so I didn't get any of that either.
Yeah, I even went to college and just skipped the whole Facebook thing, like through that. I was above it and I was not going to do it. I think the social media thing is weird. And I'd even say to people like, here, you can take my number. I don't do that Facebook thing. I was very against it. And then I was teaching yoga and I ended up dating somebody new. And it was kind of funny because he had a lot of money. He was really wealthy. And so I think that he in his world was sort of like the sun that everybody else would sort of revolve around and rotate around. And so I think in an effect to fit into his world, I had to be on his schedule. And he was like, so I like to travel really often. So I want to take 1 to 2 international trips a month. This is when I got over my fear of travel, actually.
Yeah,
he gave me
a
lot of pretty incredible gifts. So he was like, I want to take 1 to 2 international trips a month. But the thing is, you still really need to have something going on. Like, I don't want to just give you a credit card and have you going to the mall and the spa. And I was like, well, that's great because I don't want your credit card to go to the mall or the spa. And that certainly can't be the sum total of my life. But also, I don't think a job necessarily exists where I'm going to be available and free to do all of this travel with you. And so he actually pushed me out of my comfort zone. He was a really strong entrepreneur, is a really strong entrepreneur. And he said, well, there's this Instagram thing that seems to be really up and coming, and I see girls on there doing yoga. And he's like, and you teach yoga. You're great at yoga. You're pretty. We travel to cool destinations. Why don't you be like a professional Instagrammer? And this is still like, I'm new to Facebook, let alone Instagram. So I was like, you can't just build an Instagram account. I don't even use Instagram. And we kind of got together and we analyzed what everybody was doing there and what was working. And then we really built it sort of from the start as a business. And granted, I was authentically sharing, but the authentic me is somebody who's not really on social media very much. So it's been kind of an interesting run with
that.
What
part is harder to share? Is it the written part? Is that the part that's hard to share that feels less authentic to you? Or is it more about just the frequency of people seeing you and knowing what you're doing? Is it the physical part? Does the physical part feel like you lack authenticity with like, I don't just walk around in a swimsuit all day. I mean, you could because you're hot, but you know, like,
I mean, I think it's a mix of all of those in terms of the lack of authenticity, and it manifests in different ways at different times. Like, on the one hand, I was a creative writing major in college, mm-hmm. so writing is my thing. I love writing captions, and I think I'm pretty good at being vulnerable. I hate to say it, but being vulnerable in a calculated way where it's sort of driven and designed to be relatable to people and to tug people's heartstrings. And so there's almost a little bit of a lack of vulnerability in that. As much as I'm being vulnerable, there's still like kind of a calculated nature to it. But the ones that feel inauthentic to me are kind of more the days where I don't feel like writing anything. I don't really like have anything that I feel is important to say or that I want to share. But let's say I have a sponsored post that I need to get up that day. So I'll put up the post and then I'll just kind of put a throwaway caption into it. Yeah. And that doesn't feel authentic because to me, words are very important. And especially the way that we communicate with the outside world is so much of like who we are and how we're seen. And so I really like to be kind of calculated about that too and what I share. And I don't like to share throwaway stuff or even like when
because it's a reflection of you and you're like, I'm not a throwaway, but I have to do this. I'm not feeling it today.
Yep.
So you're like, oh, now you put that out there that you're not interesting or not, you know, not insightful or not inspirational. And you're like, that's not me. I am. But damn it, today I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, today I just don't want to.
The frequency is hard.
It is.
You know, because I mean, I've met with a group at one point in time, a management group, and they're like, well, it needs to be this many posts and you should do the video and do this. And I'm like, that's not me.
Well, it's always
really
more,
give a shit.
Like, too. Like, so
you
many
tell
things.
Me how I'm seriously going to make money off of that two extra a week or one a day and one video. Like, go to hell.
Yeah. Well, and I just, it's social media is hard as a career, being an influencer, because unless you're the type of person that really thrives on creating content and really thrives on connecting with large numbers of people, which I'm sort of shy. I don't thrive necessarily on connecting with large numbers of people. And I feel like the direction that social media is going is it's wanting like more and more and more of our time, not just as users, which of course it does, because that's like where ad money comes from, but also as the creators, like now a photo and a video shared, you know, even every day isn't enough anymore because now you need to be storying throughout the day need to be making like produced videos for IGTV and all of these things.
It's
and
so much.
It's hard to like keep growing in that way. I feel like sometimes my stuff has plateaued because I'm only willing to give so much of my life up to this thing.
Yeah.
And I think in order to really, really succeed, you need to give up so much more of your life than I'm
like
willing to.
You end up living your life through the lens. And like you're, you know, when I follow some people who talk to their phone a lot and I'm like, I just couldn't do it. Like, it's as if they have a relationship with their phone.
They
and
do.
Like, and I just can't do it. Like, I mean, I hold the phone up and I'm like, hi. Oh God, that was bad. That was dumb. No.
Same.
I just forget it. Like, I feel so dumb. And it's part a bit of vulnerability, but also like, I don't know.
It's also, it's a weird concept.
It's a weird concept.
Like,
have you ever
seen
the movie?
To sit there and talk to your phone like this
have
and
you ever
know
seen
that
the
it's going to go?
Her?
Yeah.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep.
Where he starts to date his operating system. Oh my God.
I feel like we're not that far from that being a reality.
I agree with you. And it's scary because I see that in some people that I follow that are willing and able to story all day long and have their, you know, the posts are almost just like, you know, secondary, but the stories are ongoing. Okay. So getting back to the lineage of, you know, becoming an influencer. So you and your boyfriend, you do your research, you kind of know what's going on. So you start traveling, you go on. And how many years would you say you did that before you started to feel like this isn't me? Or did it start right away?
It didn't start right away because I was just having fun with it in the beginning. I've always been, it's weird, I've always been a pretty shy person in my real life, but when it comes to a performance context, like being on a stage and acting or doing public speaking or any of that kind of thing, I can step up to the plate really effectively. And this was an interesting thing because on social media, if anything, I was basically like playing myself and stepping up as myself. Yeah. So at first it was this beautiful ground where I could sort of practice being myself. Like, it was hard to do that if I showed up at a party and didn't know anybody, for example. Like, real me would rather probably like hide in the bathroom than like get into the thick of it and make some new friends. Mm-hmm. So Instagram was this beautiful practice ground where I could be myself and just see how it landed with people and feel that affirmation when it was positively received.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was really fun because I was making a ton of real friends. Even if they were online friends, they were still people that I talked to very often, and they were real friends, and it just helped me grow so much as a person because it really stepped into more like being who I am and not being afraid to show up as that rather than trying to show up as, you know, whichever version of me the situation demands. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like with so many things, I think when it started feeling inauthentic was when money came into the picture because...
Do you remember your first sponsor?
Do I what?
Remember your first sponsor?
Yes, Aloe Yoga. And they're
love Aloe.
Still
You're
my
wearing
sponsor.
Aloe.
I am, yeah. I've been sponsored by them for 5 years, which has been really incredible, but it's also been somewhat of a blessing and a curse because I realized after a couple years of being sponsored for Aloe that a substantial part of my joy before that had come from picking out, you know,
yeah,
different
the creativity
printed
of
clothes.
The outfits.
And yeah, exactly. And granted, Aloe has a million pieces, so I have a ton of room to be creative. But at the same time,
yeah,
like by slightly limiting my creativity that way, it definitely took some of the joy out of it.
I mean, I get it. I lived in a world where I would grab a bottle of water, and if it wasn't the sponsored water, like, everybody's ripping labels off. Like, everywhere I went, people were taking labels off of water bottles. I'm like, does anybody really give a shit?
People totally
kind of
give a shit.
Well, the sponsor gives a shit,
yeah,
right? And, but it's like, it's, I just lived in a world where I could never, like, nothing could be in the background of a picture. You couldn't talk about something. You couldn't be in a video with something using it because you'd be, even if you weren't directly promoting it because it was part of your life, you'd be indirectly promoting
yep.
it. And you just live this life where you have to be careful what's in every picture and everything you say and everything you have because you're like, I don't want to get in trouble for having the wrong stuff when, you know,
when you rely on that as income.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, and that was the world. That was the world. What, I'm curious, like, I mean, I love, like, Aloe has done a great job of, you know, getting all of you influencers together and doing, like, it was a really clever campaign
yeah.
to go and do the Aloe retreat thing where, mm-hmm. you know, they've got Aloe and flowers, like, the size of, you know,
yeah.
like a small house and, you know, the unicorn floaties and all the stuff and they take mm-hmm. care of you and meals and everything. And
yeah.
all you guys would post about it because, of course, it was done in beautiful locations with beautiful people.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, like, what's your obligation to them?
Well, mostly, I mean, of course, I have a certain number of posts and stories and that kind of thing that I have to
share. Per day, per week,
per month. It's a monthly thing. And they're not too stringent. They're
yeah.
definitely doable expectations,
yeah.
which I'm really grateful for because there are certainly other companies out there that
yeah.
just have the craziest list of things that you need to complete where it doesn't
sure.
even feel creative anymore. So there's that, but I think the main part is that I can't wear any clothing from any competing activewear brand.
Yeah.
Which is fine because Alice's clothes are honestly
yeah,
so cute.
Yeah, they do, but
and
it's
they,
not realistic. I
no.
mean, look, like nobody, I mean, you can be someone that makes, you know, high-end anything, you go on a red carpet, you're probably not going to wear that every single time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
it's, no matter what it is, you don't wear one brand your whole life. So it does, and the thing is like, people get that, right? But
yeah.
they also somewhat own that category with you, so.
They absolutely do.
It's, is it like in your everyday life as well as in your,
Well, if I go to a yoga class or something, you will never
yeah.
see me wearing Lululemon. Actually, I don't even own Lululemon, which is why that's a perfect example.
It's been 5 years, so it's probably all faded away.
Yeah, yeah. I finally just, you know, I think in the beginning I kind of like held on to some other brands that I liked, but
mm-hmm.
then I was, same as you're saying, you're like, even in your regular life, you're like, oh, well, I can't use this because I could get in trouble. And
if it's in a picture and you can see the label and it's
or even
silly.
Like I'm recognizable enough within
yeah.
the yoga world that it's like, I wouldn't do this, but if I were to go to a yoga class wearing Lululemon, when
oh, yeah.
so many people know that I'm sponsored by Aloe, like it could
yeah.
easily get back
yeah.
to them, like, oh, I saw Gypsy
yeah.
Goddess at a
yeah.
yoga class and she was wearing Lululemon. That's crazy.
Well, it's cool though that you got to collaborate and do a little like collection with them.
Yeah,
was that
was
ongoing
exciting.
Or was that? I remember it had like feathers on it and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
We did that for I think about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
and
it was cool. I really liked the collection.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was actually the reason I said yes. I had had a bunch of yoga clothing companies come to me and say, we only want you to wear our clothing exclusively. But I was never that motivated to do it because, like I said,
yeah.
it was such a joyful experience to me to pick
yeah.
out my outfits. But then the CEO of Aloe emailed me one day in, let's see, 5 years ago, so 2014. And he was like, hey, I'm in Arizona and I'd love to take a meeting with you. I'd like to talk to you about exclusively wearing our clothing and potentially doing your own line, which is what I really wanted
yeah.
the whole time. But I knew that I didn't know enough about how to do that. So the thing that I was really working hard at that time to manifest was I wanted to do a capsule collection for somebody.
That's
it was,
what you did.
Yeah, because it was this beautifully safe way to learn all of these things,
yeah.
work with a professional design team, see how they do things, but then at the same time, not have the risk of
right.
investing in this
right.
financially. So it's like, he said the man, and at that time, I didn't think Aloe was cute at all because they had just done a big rebrand and before they were doing like skorts and weird things that I would not wear. But he said the magic words, like, potentially do your own line. And so I took the meeting, and the rest is history, and I'm so glad I did. They've been really good.
Cool.
And supportive to me.
I mean, there's opportunities come with responsibilities, but so that came along. So, like, fast forward, so now you finally get to the point where you're like, I've had enough. Like, how long did you, like, what was the breaking point?
I think the breaking point was likely just one too many sponsored posts, because I think in the beginning, whether I was being authentic and vulnerable or not wasn't even a part of my thought process, because I was always being authentic and vulnerable, so it wasn't even something that I had to think about consciously. But then as money became more involved, and with one-off sponsored posts, like brands, it's a trip to work with brands, because they really want to get their exact message out there, but they want to do it sort of in
They want to give you the there's a better word for it, but the text. They want they give you the writing.
The
brand message. They give you the hashtags, and there's always too many of those, and the @, and they want to the message is always super generic.
Well, yeah, and especially like sending things in for approval. Like, I'll write a caption that, although it's a sponsored post, I actually feel okay sharing it, and it feels like me. And they'll send it back, and it's just got tons of jargon and exact slogans put into it. Right. And I'm like, this isn't even me anymore. And so then it's this weird thing where I kind of have to share something that I'm not actually proud of anymore. And I think doing that enough times just really started to weigh on me.
Yeah.
And granted, I'm not away from it. Like, I still do sponsored posts and that kind of thing sometimes, but I try to be way more discerning about who I work with, so that it really can feel not just like on brand, but so that it can actually feel like me.
And as you go on and you earn the credibility and the status, which you have to, you know, be, move the needle, you have leverage. And so then you can go to them and you can say, you need to let me rewrite these posts in my words and things like that. Like, ask those things, you can definitely ask for.
Because I did have that conversation a lot.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I'm not going to write what they write. I will rewrite what they write, but I'm not going to post exactly what they want, because it's, again, you're putting something out there that's not you. And if the job is to be authentic, it's not being accomplished.
Well, I think I got to this place where it didn't feel like me anymore, and it almost was easier to just, it's funny, sometimes I talk about Gypset Goddess and Caitlin in the third person, because it's almost like they're two different people. Like, I'll be talking with my boyfriend, and I'll say, like, oh, you know, he'll point out an article of clothing, for example, and I'll be like, oh, Gypset Goddess would wear that, but I don't really like it, because there became, like, this schism between, like, who I am in real life and who I was playing online, and I think I just started resting on my laurels, and it was so much easier to play this sort of yoga character who was like happy all the time and just manifesting my dreams no matter what life throws at me, which are like valuable things, but like I wasn't living it. I was just talking about
it. Social media exacerbates those things, because we have the ability to filter things out. Remember when we would take pictures and it was with a disposable camera, a regular camera, and you'd send in the film and then you'd get it? Like, it just was what it was, and you'd sit in the car and look at the pictures because you hadn't really seen them yet. And now, I mean, you'll take 20 pictures and you'll be like, oh, and not that one. Hang on, let me do this one more time. The lighting's better. Okay, if I just do this, like, you're pre-filtering the filter. Like, and it's, you know, it's a very fake world, but it's not that we've never done it. It's just that social media is an easy way to do it. And I think this happens in regular life too. I mean, this is really, more of a parallel of so many different situations. You can look at a family that looks like they're really happy, and you know, maybe you're best friends with them, and you know that their marriage is super on the rocks, and you know their kid is getting in trouble at school or whatever it is. And so, you know, there's so much stuff that we hide about ourselves, and with social media, it's even worse. It's just really just.
Well, I think it's a magnified version of that, because with social media comes so many tools that encourage us to do that. Like, sure, you can do it in your real life. You know, you can be the family who's having marital problems, but shows, you know, a happy face to the rest of the world. But with social media, there's like Facetune and filters and all of these different things where that little voice inside us, that negative voice that's like, you should change this, you should fix this, your waist should be smaller, your boobs should be bigger. I mean, whatever it is,
okay,
there's a tool and an app for that.
What have you used?
I've used Facetune in the past. I kind of use it in a funny way, though. I definitely use it sometimes, but it's because I'm not a model, and I don't have these skills to know the exact right angles. So, like, I have a pretty great body, and I love my body, and I love my face, but every once in a while in photos, there is just a funky angle that makes me look, like, not even true to who I am. So
You don't recognize it?
Yeah, where I'm like, oh, my God, does my... Like, do my hips look like that? Does my waist look like that? Like, where did those even come from? Yeah. So I think I've mostly used it to kind of, like, try to bring the photo back to how I actually look when it gets funky. But, I mean, I've definitely done some shady things. I've corrected yoga poses with Facetune before. Like I said, I kind of use it in weird ways. Like, I don't, you know, give myself an hourglass figure, but I might, like, straighten a knee every now and then.
Yeah, I would say that... For me, I mean, I remember seeing this picture of someone and I was like, that girl ain't that tall. I know who she is. And then I looked up on Google if you could download an app to make you taller. You can.
Yeah.
There's literally an app for everything.
Yeah, you just change the perspective of the photo.
Yeah, so and I was like, oh. And, but I don't, the only step I'll do is I will, like, brighten, or if some kind of a, if something lighter or picking up highlights or shadows, like highlights, shadow, I don't have an extra app for anything. I just use what Instagram has. So
I like that.
So if it maybe smooths my face out a little, let's say, or like makes me look like I have less wrinkles, well, you know, maybe I will use that, but I don't do anything additional. Like, there's nothing outside of what Instagram offers. And even with Instagram, I really try and, I try and make sure that the filter's not one that's like I never use the ones where you look like a damn puppy dog or whatever it is. And some of them, like the beauty filters and stuff, I don't use those because I don't do stories really. So it's really just the options that are in the Instagram picture options.
I've definitely used the story filters a couple times.
And you can, but the thing is, you can kind of tell.
Yeah. And things just look overly smooth.
Yeah.
And sort of like
your eyes get a little
almost.
Bit bigger.
Yeah.
You just take on a little bit more of a cat-like look. That's what I say. I'm like, everybody's starting to look like a cat.
I went through a phase when I found this app called Touch Retouch that is really effective at taking things out of photos.
Oh.
Like, you can take out people around you or that kind of thing. But I also, in that app, learned how to use the clone tool.
Oh.
And so, like, I went a little crazy with that at one time. Like, my hair is, you know, I don't have a ton of hair on my head. It's kind of like thin hair, and it's something I've always been self-conscious about. So, like, all of a sudden, with that clone tool, I had, like, twice as much hair.
Oh, my God.
And I went through a phase with using that and Facetune maybe about 2 years ago where all of a sudden I was editing everything. Like, I didn't like how this bush looked over here, so I'd paint in an entire wall of ivy. And to the point where the photos didn't at all look the same as where they initially were. And that was definitely a low point for me that I kind of had to, like, shake my head and wake up out of.
And isn't that crazy? Because you're doing it to feel better about yourself, but in the end, all you feel is worse.
Oh, absolutely. There's this whole psychological phenomenon about how people are using Instagram and Snapchat filters, especially the story filters. And so they get really used to seeing their face with no lines and with bigger eyes. And so then they take a normal selfie and look at their face, or even look at their face without a filter. And they're like, oh, I look like shit. Where did these wrinkles
come from?
Why are my eyes the size of little peas? And it's like, actually, that's how you look. But you've literally been viewing yourself through a filter this whole time until you forget what you actually look like in real life and expect to see the filter. And that's not what's there.
Yeah. So have you grown from this sort of confession?
Yeah, I think so, a little bit. I actually did a public speaking thing. It wasn't a TED Talk, but it was like a similar format a few years ago. And I was supposed to prepare this whole thing, but it came to be, I'm always a bit last minute with everything. And so it came to be like 5 days before and I had nothing. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do this talk for 20 minutes. What am I even going to do? And so I talked to the
person. That's daunting. Good for you.
Yeah, I talked to the person who was hosting it. And we were going through different topics that I thought I could talk about, but they were all kind of safe. And one time when I first met him, we had had this lunch where it was a dark day, and I ended up breaking down crying with somebody I had never met before about how inauthentic my Instagram felt.
And they're like, who's this crazy girl?
Oh, but he was into it. He's like a self-work guy, so he's like, yes, this is what you need to talk about. And I was like, really? You think I should just throw my whole Instagram under the bus for this talk, huh? And he was like, yeah, that would be inspiring. So I did. I, in the end, didn't have it written, but I walked up there with like a 25-photo slideshow that I had created, and there was some really scary before and afters. Like, wow. I actually did throw my Instagram under the bus, and in this talk, I threw up on the screen all of these different photos where I had seriously photoshopped it, whether it was the background or my body or different things, like captions that had been lies. And I think ever since I had that moment, it's been so much easier to have these conversations where I can own my own inauthenticity, because it's like by naming it that it loses its power over you.
That's you just said it. And there's so many people that say that and have written that, but by calling the problem out, you don't give it power anymore.
Yep. It's really true.
Yeah, it's a tough hurdle to cross, but I have a saying for things that are difficult, that the only way out is through.
So true.
And so if you don't go through that sort of like confession or admission, or you know, you're afraid of being vulnerable, so the exact thing you need to do is be vulnerable, and it takes away the fear of it and the power of it to control you.
Well, it's sort of like addiction, you know, like in any type of study of people handling addictions, like AA, any of these, they always say that the first step is recognizing that there's a problem. And I think that's
right.
So
they
many,
say it. They're like, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, and that's because it's a really powerful thing. And I think that that's across the board in all of our problems. Like, I think so many people are addicted to sort of being their inauthentic selves and like showing up a certain way. And like, until you call out how you've been inauthentic, it's hard to ever be authentic without recognizing that.
Well, where is this all going? Right? Like, where is all this going? Because at some point in time, we're not going to know what we look like, everyone looks like anymore. I mean, there's just so many, they're getting better. I mean, I don't know about you, but this whole like make yourself older app that just came out, I mean,
it freaks me out.
It freaks me out because I actually wonder what they're doing. I actually wonder if the purpose of some of this stuff is to develop AI so that it can, you know, learn you better and learn people better, and part of data, basically.
Well, like
data,
that 10-year challenge.
Data, right, the 10-year
challenge. That's what everyone said about that.
Exactly.
That, like, if you wanted to train an AI, like, what would be the perfect way to do it? Like, an AI aging thing?
Hang on. So they asked for 10 years ago to now.
Uh-huh.
Now they're asking for now to, what is it, probably 30 years down the line or something? 20, 30 years that ages you? I mean, that AI is now getting data and information on what you look like for your entire life.
I think the exact same thing.
And
it can help with facial recognition and all of that. I absolutely agree. I'm so happy to have this conversation because so often I talk to other people who are influencers and they don't see it. Like, I didn't do the 10-year challenge.
I didn't either.
Because that shit totally freaked me out.
That's
and
right.
And so many people I know did it. And I was like, don't you think it's weird? Like, Have you just thought this one through? Oh no, that was a popular post, so we all just jumped on the bandwagon. And like, even that kind of thing where, you know, something freaks you out inside and gives you a little bit of a creepy feeling, but like everyone just jumps on the bandwagon because it's the cool thing to do right now. Like, just seeing so many people jump on a bandwagon like that one makes me really question it and not as much want to be on it.
Yeah, and where does that come from? And who's controlling the apps and the message and the promotion and the, like, how did that catch on within like 24 hours? Like, I feel like within a day, all of a sudden, everyone has this face app thing that shows what you look like when you get old. Just like the 10-year challenge thing was like, where did this stuff come from? And all of a sudden, everybody's doing it. It's like, you just have to look layers deeper and, you know, do your research. Like, listen to podcasts about people that, like, there's somebody that worked for Facebook that I listened to. It was a very interesting information about what they're collecting. One of the pieces of information from that was that, you know, the when you sign into something and it's asking for one final last step of you to click on all the boxes that have a lamp post in it or something. And how he's like, notice how it's getting harder? He's like, because the AI needs to learn better. And so, like, those are all really trippy things that are going on in the world. And we're all going along with it because it's fun, it's accessible, it's easy, it's cool. But it's not necessarily innocent.
Yeah, you have to question the intentions of it. I think about that in so many ways. Like, technology just, like as, you know, normal people who are not like high up in the tech business, like we don't even know all of the things that's going on behind the scenes with technology. And I think about, you know, virtual reality and these kind of things and automation. And I read this really interesting article about how the reason that so many of the Silicon Valley companies are putting in a ton of money into virtual reality is due to the fallout that automation is going to cause, because so many people with all of these traditional jobs that just aren't going to exist anymore are basically going to be a class of like the jobless, and like those people need to do something with their time. And so a lot of people are trying to make, a lot of Silicon Valley companies are trying to make like a really strong virtual reality play for like the jobless of the future. And I think that, you know, training AI and training all of these things and, you know, making the virtual world look that much more cohesive with the world in which we inhabit. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder about all of this.
So you've obviously listened to Elon Musk stuff about the probability of being in a virtual reality is, you know, so extremely high.
That we're in a simulation and that theory.
I read a book called Holographic Universe, and it's a very fascinating read to... well, I mean, even scientists have said we can break down literally everything into zeros and ones, which is just crazy. And then when you think about when you go out into your world and how small the world seems, and you're like, oh, but I follow you, and oh, I know you, and oh, you're from there. And like, you just kind of wonder if your own mind is really creating your reality because it's some kind of freaking virtual reality thing. I mean, it's all very... And then there are things that just don't make sense, right? When you read Holographic Universe, you're reading these stories of these unbelievable experiences people are having that are beyond physical comprehension of what's possible. And you're like, but how? And so it makes you really wonder, what is the fabric of our reality? And, you know, speaking to somebody yesterday, like, at the end of the day, whether you know or don't know if you do live in a virtual reality or not, it kind of doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Although we as humans really want to know the answer to things. We just want answers, right? Yep. Like we're an answer-seeking society.
Yeah, we're not even going to do anything with them, but we want to know.
We just want to know. So then the point is then moving away from like what is real and what isn't real, because we don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe some small sector of the world knows. I don't know. I don't know if I maybe the Illuminati knows if that's real or all of that whole world. But then what do we do? Like what do you feel like is the next step then? With all this stuff in mind and this is fake, this is real, whatever, like how do you want to walk forward in your life and how do you want to be remembered?
I think the biggest thing that we can do is live in the present now, because you're absolutely right. We don't know any of those answers. And so without knowing those answers, it's really hard to plan accordingly. So I think it's so much easier to focus on the things that we can control and the things that we do know rather than the things that we don't. And, you know, we can control every day in the present. And like of the things that we can control in the present, some of those lend well to building the future that we want to build. So I think we all really just need to tune into ourselves and make sure that we're still connecting with other people. Yeah. I think connecting with other people is so much of how we grow. Yeah. And in this world that says we're more connected than ever, I think so many people out there feel less connected. 100%. And I think it's really important that we need to keep on staying connected, because it's good for our minds, it's good for our bodies, it's good for our psyche, but honestly, it's also good for, like, if automation is something that you're worried about, like, computers can't connect people. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd all be feeling more connected than ever, actually, because of social media, because of algorithms, because of these things. And so, like, if you really want to stay necessary in an age of automation, like, you either have to be creative or you have to connect people.
How do you do that?
Well, my creativity manifests in a lot of different forms. I mean, of course, obviously through photos and videos that I share on Instagram and yoga sequences, but also just through creative thinking. Like, it's so easy to think about things the way that we're taught or think about things the way that we learned them in school. And I think it's so important to be creative in the way that you think about things and creative in the way that you view a problem. Like, maybe rather than trying to solve it the traditional way when that's really hard, you get creative and find an easier way to solve it. Like, I'm really inspired by trying to solve complex problems. And that's also, I think, a big way that I connect with people, to tie the two together, is I think that I've sort of become inadvertently a relationship coach to so many of my friends. And it's because I really like problem solving, especially when they're complicated. So they come to me with these really complex problems that they're dealing with in the present.
Yeah. And we're not talking about math problems. We're talking about emotional problems.
Yeah, I'm talking about life. People problems, life problems, business problems. I mean, I think so often we work harder when we could be working smarter, but it's because we're all in our own narrow perspective. And so I think I'm really good at connecting people by being the person that they can come to and ask them questions to help them get out of these horse blinders that they're wearing. And I think just through, I creatively solve problems and share that information with people, and it all sort of feeds into my creativity and helps me connect with people and helps other people connect with each other.
Is that something you've always done or something you do more of now?
It's something that I've been doing more of now. I mean, I think I've always had good advice, but I didn't trust myself and say it with the same sort of authority and vigor as I'm able to now, because I believe in myself so much more. And I learned a lot recently about channeling and different people who channel. And
we were talking about Abraham Hicks.
We were. And I don't know who or what I'm challenging, but when it comes to a complex problem and finding a unique answer and a unique solve for it, sometimes these words just come into my head.
Yes.
I don't even know where they're from. And I'll stop people mid-conversation and be like, you know what? This is so weird. I don't even know why I'm telling you this, but I just feel like I have to tell you this thing. And I'll tell them, and they're like, wow, this is the answer I've been looking for the whole time. I've been grappling with this for weeks, and you just solved it in a second. And I don't even know where it came from. I didn't consciously think about those.
Very interesting, because I do that, but I do it on myself. So I will, certain situations, usually has to do with relationships. A lot of times they feel more sensitive, but in certain situations, basically if there's an emotional context to it, then I'll get these hits or words or phrases you know, or it'll be worth it, or yes, or they'll be phrases or words or something, but you'll get the answer, and it'll be repetitious. It's always the same one, and it's more for me. I don't get it for other people. But it's that intuitive quality that we all have, that if you get quiet enough to listen to it, it's very helpful. Mm-hmm. But I think it's where we're going as a society, as if we're going to grow, in our consciousness and evolve, is that we have to tap into this infinite source of information that is available to us and has no time and space as a dimension to live in. It is essentially in the ethers of information that is always connected. And it's because it's powerful stuff. I've also done this something called I would call it free writing, where I'll start writing and I might just start writing, but then I'll also start to speak in a third person as if I am my soul, or I am my intuition. And I'll start, and I'll ask the question, and then I'll just start writing an answer, and I'll ask the question and just start. And it's not with thought. It's just with intuition. And I call it free writing.
I love that. It's stream of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty cool stuff.
Well, I feel like we need to hang out, because you can do it for yourself, but you don't do it for other people that much. And I can totally do it for
so
other people,
but
I can't do it with myself. You can teach me your ways. I feel like it's so much about intuition. I think that's why I'm able to do it for people now, is because I always had those things pop up, but I didn't really trust them. And I definitely didn't trust them enough to say them out loud to people.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you're like, oh, did I just make that up?
Yeah,
myself?
Totally. Where's that even
Where'd that
coming
come from?
Why do I think I know that?
Yeah.
But then I just slowly but surely started actually saying them out loud. And when I had messages for people, I would share them. And
then when they validate them,
totally,
you go, I'll do it again.
I'm oh gosh, I guess I should keep practicing this. And I feel like I'm just now starting to kind of hone into that voice when it, you know, talks for me. But I think it's just so much quieter. Other people's problems seem so much clearer to solve than my own.
Oh man, yes. But please hang out with me and tell me about all the things that I need to know that are intuitive and in the ethers that you can help me with. I think that's a really powerful thing. And I think that, do you know how you got to the point of being able to hear it? Is there a self-care program you have that helped develop that, or get you quiet enough to hear it, or how did that evolve?
Well, for other people, it just comes from listening. Mm-hmm. I think listening is something I've worked really hard on, because for the longest time, like I'm sure you understand this as well, because you have so many great stories. I have a ton of great stories. And so especially with my social anxiety, sometimes it's easier to fall back on just telling my own stories, because I know they go over well and that kind of thing. But then when I'm around people, it doesn't make them feel heard. And honestly, I don't even hear them, because while they're talking, I'm already trying to think about the related story that I have that I can share. Mm-hmm. And so I realized this about myself, and I decided I really wanted to break that pattern, because I wanted closer, more connected relationships in my life. So I started really focusing and listening. And when I listen to other people, I really focus on clearing my mind and hearing them and making the space to respond to actually what they're saying, rather than respond with my own version of it that I've preconceived while they were talking. And
been distracted and don't listen to the end of what they're saying, because you're already like, and when they're, as soon as they're done, I'm going to start talking.
Yeah. And I think that's like almost the issue, is I can do it for other people because I get my mind really quiet with the intention for sort of listening for the words between the words and what they're saying. But I have such a hard time doing that for myself. Like, I don't even meditate nearly as often as I should, or really very much at all. It's kind of a once in a blue moon thing, and it's probably guided meditations, not just, God forbid, sitting with myself. And I think that's why I can't really hear the voice within me, because I'm not creating the quiet mind that I do for other people where I can hear it.
Yeah, that's so true. That's interesting. Well, I feel like I've had the same problem. Like, this actually, like, doing a podcast has taught me to listen, because I'm also the same. Like, I have these stories, and as soon as something pops into my head, if I don't say it, I will forget. Mm-hmm. And of course, my ego says, this story is totally worth it.
They need it.
They need this story. But the podcast has been a good exercise in listening to people all the way through. And it's also, you know, the only way that you can really have a both-way conversation is if you're listening, and if you're listening to me and I'm listening to you, and we could go on and on mm-hmm. because we're really integrated with each other and playing off of each other, instead of just, you know, here's my stories. So it's been an interesting transition. And also, I'm so used to being interviewed that it was like quite the transition to go, okay, now I have to prepare. Like, what am I going to ask them, you know?
Yeah.
But it's been really, really cool. So tell me, like, as far as, you know, manifesting, what's next?
Well, I've had some successful manifestation lately. I feel like I've manifested the love of my life, which is really exciting.
That's so cool.
And I've always kind of dreamed of creating, like I said, when I was a kid, I really wanted to start a business where I could work with the people that I love, so that, like, we have the same time on, the same time off, and the same amount of money, so we can all go play together. And so I think I always kind of had a secret dream of starting a business with, like, my lover, my partner. And now we're doing that. So I feel like I've kind of manifested both of those things. But the current manifestation is I'm starting an incense company. But I think to call it simply incense cheapens it a little bit, because it's more Palo Santo and wood-based, less like traditional powdery incense. Yes, that's on the list.
Yeah, we love sandalwood.
Yes, that's going to happen. Any kind of wood that burns and has an spiritual qualities to it, we're probably going to dip our fingers into. Yep. So it's going to be largely based around Palo Santo and Copal. So I really would like to get that released in less than 6 months. And I'm, like I told you before, I've let so many times that I started businesses, like, let those little obstacles that I've been trying to overcome stop me from doing it. But so I'm also just manifesting the power within myself to just bruise through all of those obstacles and keep going no matter what. And I have this affirmation that I keep saying to myself that's like, it's not going to fail. But even if it does, who cares? Yeah. On to the next. And before, that was not at all the narrative that I had in my head. So I'm just trying to manifest more success in my life in the areas of business and love. And, of course, personal growth. But I feel like that's a bit ahead of the relationships and love.
Well, it's not easy. It's painful. I think that there's a misconception that, and, you know, I'm sure you've seen it as I have, like, spiritual growth and, in reality versus in my mind. And it's like kittens and rainbows is what you think it's going to be like. And what it is, like, I'm just like such a mess.
Right.
And it's so much different in reality. So I always tell people that just like the only way out is through, that, you know, there's no pain, there's no growth before pain. You will have to go through pain before you have growth, because you have to let things die, you have to let things go, mm-hmm. you have to transition, you have to be brave, you have to stand in your truth, and all of those things are not easy.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you have faced fears, and the more painful it is, the better you're going to come out the other side. So, and you know, just like when you get sick and you look back and you think, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. In the middle of it, you're going to die.
Yeah.
You're absolutely going to die. Just like when you're in the middle of whether it's emotional or spiritual growth or whatever it is, personal growth, mental growth, you think you're going to die. Like, there's no mm-hmm. way I'm going to get through this, and this is the worst. And as I've said at past times in my life, I just want to wake up in 3 months and have it all be over with.
Yeah.
It is, the journey is the part, it's the important part, is going through the mess. And so that's amazing that you've, you know, dug in and gotten strong and recognized your faults so that you can face them and overcome them. I think that's a really powerful thing, and I'm inspired by that, and I really appreciate you coming in and chatting with me. And so basically now you're coming over afterwards and you're going to channel for me, and
Perfect.
You're going to give me hits and let me know what my life's all about.
I would love to.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks everybody for listening to the Pretty Intense podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. And also thank you so much, Trevor Hall, for the awesome music. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, please click on the subscribe button.